for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Auto loans to buyers with weak credit ratings have risen sharply in recent years. Some consumer groups are concerned about high interest rates on these subprime loans and the number of cars being repossessed. Industry advocates have fought back against comparisons to the subprime mortgage market, and they say fluctuations in the number of outstanding auto loans are normal. Joining me in the studio to talk about auto lending, Chris Steinberg of the American Financial Services Association, and Chris Kukla of the Center for Responsible Lending. Joining us from a studio in New York, Michael Corkery of the New York Times. I hope you'll call us, weigh in with your own opinion. 800-433-8850. Send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or send us a tweet. And thank you all for joining us.
Great to
be here.
Looking
forward to it.
Thank you. And Michael Corkery, let me start with you. You've been writing about this for some time. First of all, explain what a subprime auto loan actually is.
Sure. So for the past year, my colleague at the New York Times, Jessica Silver Greenberg, and I have been writing about the growth of subprime auto loans in the United States. Auto loans, subprime auto loans, are made to people with troubled credit. People have had blemishes on their credit reports, like a foreclosure or, you know, delinquencies on their credit cards, and therefore, you know, can't qualify for a prime loan, which typically has a much lower interest rate than a subprime loan. Now, some subprime loans, they vary in interest rate depending on people's credit scores and financial background, but they can, at least the ones that we've seen, go as high as 23-24%.
One of the people you talked about in one of your articles was Rodney Durham. Tell us about him.
Sure. Rodney was a gentleman who is a gentleman, lives in Binghamton, New York. Rodney had qualified for a subprime auto loan from Wells Fargo, and it turned out Rodney says that he qualified despite not having worked since the late 80s, yet his application for his loan said that he indeed had a job much sooner, more recently than that, and there were other issues with his loan application. And Rodney was one of many people that we spoke to that not only were qualifying for and receiving these high interest rate loans, but who's told us about having their applications containing misleading or faulty information, which allowed them to qualify for these loans.
Now, give us a sense of just how much this is actually happening, that is, lending to risky borrowers.
Sure. So right now, figures show it's about a quarter of all auto loans go to subprime borrowers. In the past few years, since the financial crisis, when all types of lending, you know, whether it was mortgages or anything to people with less than stellar credit, or even businesses that with less than stellar credit, in recent years, it's gone up quite a bit. Many of these loans are securitized, which means they often, this is something that happened during the mortgage boom, where they're bundled and sold in bonds to investors. And just that market in securitized subprime auto loans has gone up 300% since 2010. So it's been a big increase in this type of lending.
Michael Corkery, he is a reporter for the New York Times covering banking and consumer finance. Chris Steinberg as president and CEO of the American Financial Services Association. How do you see it?
Well, you know, basically the auto lending business has had some of its best years since the recession. And the result of this is simply because people have learned some lessons from having difficulty during those times of mortgage and are paying their auto loans. The performance of auto loans has never been better than it has been over the last several years. But I think comparing it to looking at the mortgage bubble and what occurred back in 2006, 2007, is auto lending is entirely different. We must look at auto as a very simple loan in that it's not exotic. We don't have any adjustable rate mortgages that adjust after 2 years. You don't have any no document loans. You don't have any liar loans, interest-only loans. So all of those exotic products that existed in the mortgage time back in 05, 06, 07 don't exist for auto. Auto has been the same for the last 30 years. You have basically your term and the amount and the APR. Nothing has changed. And if you look at the performance of auto loans, even during the recession, when you would think because of high unemployment and all the other factors that were increasing, that the loans, people would not be paying their auto loans. And actually, one of the reasons why securitization has done better in auto is because people have been paying their auto loans. So unlike other areas of credit.
So from your perspective, the reporting that Michael Corkery and his partner have done casts a strange light or an erroneous light on what's happening?
Thanks, Diane. Michael mentioned that since 2010, securitizations have increased over 300%. And that sounds pretty alarming when you look at those statistics. But we have to remember back in 2009, there was basically no capital markets. There was almost no securitizations done at all not because of anything that was wrong in the auto sector, but because there was a reaction just generally in the capital markets because of what was happening in mortgage. So you went from almost a base of zero to back towards normal levels of where it is today. So this is back to where it was in the early 2000s, and we don't see an unusual jump.
All right. Let's turn now to Chris Kukla, who is with the Center for Responsible Lending. Why is your center concerned about what's happening here?
We're concerned because we are seeing some practices in the auto lending market that look a little bit like the subprime mortgage market. Now, we will agree that the two markets are different, that there are different collateral, they're lending for different reasons. But there are some signs in the subprime auto market that have us concerned. There are a couple of hallmarks to the subprime mortgage crisis that I think we should take lessons from. One is that there was this practice of risk layering. And risk layering means that you take one risky practice and then you layer it on top of another. So you can't look at the risky practices in isolation. You have to look at whether or not there are loans that are being saddled with excessive risk and that risk being layered on top of it. And we're seeing some signs that that's the case in auto. So, for instance, particularly in subprime, you see significantly high interest rates. You're seeing interest rates in the, you know, from anywhere from 15 to 29% on a secured loan. That's pretty significant. You see increasing loan terms. So the length of the loans have been increasing over time, where now the average car loan is a 66-month loan, which means that you're in debt over 5 years. And it's not uncommon to see 72 and 84-month loans.
And are these interest rates primarily on used cars or new cars?
Well, most people who have subprime credit end up getting used cars, in large part because they're cheaper. And so they, because of the higher interest rate, they can't afford to buy as much car as they might have been able to with a lower interest rate.
And do we have any sense of how many people are defaulting on those loans.
Well, and that's something that Chris Steinberg and I have a little bit of disagreement about. The way that we measure delinquencies and defaults right now is that we do and the way that the industry reports it is a snapshot in time. So what they look at is that as of today, how many loans do we have that have defaulted or are in delinquency versus the total number of loans outstanding? They don't tell us how many loans have we repossessed over the course of the year, or how many have been delinquent over the course of a year. But a second problem with this is that autos get repossessed very quickly. According to the data that we've seen, the average repossession occurs within 44 days. Uh-huh. And so those loans are taken off the books really quickly. We actually did released a research report that where we looked at the delinquency and default numbers. And if it took as long to repossess a car as it does to foreclose on a house, so comparing it to the mortgage market, which the industry's done quite a bit, the average foreclosure is 544 days.
On a house
versus 44 days on an auto loan. If you take those two, if it took that long, the default rate on auto would be around 7.5%, which is significant and would be seen as a significant rise.
Chris Kukla, he's Senior Vice President of the Center for Responsible Lending. When we come back, we'll talk further. We'll take your calls, your email. I look forward to speaking with you.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Lumosity, offering a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving, with brain games to calculate baseline scores and build a personalized brain training program. Performance can be compared to global averages. Learn more at Lumosity.com. From the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. And from Jeffrey Kenner, in appreciation of NPR's international correspondents, who take great risks to keep listeners informed.
And if you've just joined us, we're talking about risky auto loans made to people who sometimes cannot afford to pay off those loans they've received, primarily in the used car market. Here in the studio, Chris Kukla of the Center for Responsible Lending and Chris Steinberg of the American Financial Services Association. On the line with us from New York is Michael Corkery, a reporter for the New York Times covering banking and consumer finance. Chris Steinberg, you heard Chris Kukla outline what he sees as the data pointing to people defaulting, pointing to repossession, the amount of time it takes to repossess a car, and so on. What's your picture of all this?
Diane, I'd like to put this in a little context. I think both Michael and Chris Kukla have said that the percentage of subprime auto loans has increased dramatically. And I went back and I looked at the history of this and what percentage of the population, and I think we're concentrating primarily on used cars. When the actual, you look at the data, it's one of the less, that percentage has not increased. So in other words, the percentage of subprime borrowers today, as far as the general population for auto loans, has not increased. It's about 32% of the used auto loans. And going back to 2007, at one time it approached almost 40% at 38%. So it has declined over time. And even this year is less of the population than it was last year.
But the question becomes how many of those 32% who are taking out these prime loans are actually able to repay them and hold on to their cars?
Well, it was indicated that the average repossession is in 44 days. I have not heard that before. Would it be in a lender's best interest to repossess a car after one missed payment? I mean, that does not make sense. It is obviously in the incentive of the lender is to make sure that that loan performance give and work with the customer to give them time to do that.
Michael Corkery, what about that?
Well, I think, the numbers are, it's interesting to look historically, but again, 2007 and the lending that was going on broadly across the financial system is not something I think a lot of regulators or anyone wants to repeat, given how overheated it was. So I think, one of the, as we talk about just how much growth there has been, I think, we talk about, whether in that growth, or whatever the extent of it is, what the risks may be to the financial system. And Chris Steinberg, you say, many of these, I think, as many people in the industry have argued, that the risks are somewhat low and the defaults have been low historically. But again, the underpinnings of that and some of the reporting we've tried to do is to show, what's behind some of those default trends, and the idea that you could repossess a car so quickly, while that helps lenders and helps reduce the risk, creates an enormous amount of hardship for folks that have these loans. And if they had a hard time, being able to afford them and were inevitably going to default and lose their cars, some of our reporting wanted to show how and has shown how difficult that is for people and how that they get these loans to get a car so they can get to work and be part of the economic system. But then when they lose it to repossession, it sets them even further back. So that's another part of this growth and this industry that we've tried to examine, not just the risks to investors or to lenders that are making them, but the impact on the people getting these loans.
Michael, talk about the influx of investor money into this whole situation and how it may or may not affect the issuance of subprime loans.
Sure. So banks, which many of them, big banks and small banks, make auto loans and are large auto loan lenders, also to have big subprime portfolios. But lenders are under a lot of the banks are under a lot of regulatory pressure, and since the financial crisis, so they're some of their growth has been limited by those regulatory pressures not to take too much risk. So the booming in the securitization market, where investors that will buy these bonds don't have those concerns and don't have those regulatory concerns. And in this low interest rate environment, these securities backed by these auto loans yield quite a bit of return, relative to similar fixed income assets. And so they are quite popular. So that investor demand has helped fuel even more loans to subprime borrowers.
Chris Kukla.
Well, I think that's true. And when I talked earlier about some signs in the market that make us concerned, one of those signs is the increase in the number of investors who are buying into the subprime auto market and buying into those subprime bonds. We saw that same kind of run-up in the run-up to the foreclosure crisis, where investors were not only buying into the bond market, but some of them were actually buying lenders wholesale so that they could control the pipeline and control the securitization process.
Give me an example.
Well, certainly. So Exeter Finance is owned by a private equity firm that bought the firm in large part because they wanted access to the subprime auto market. We have a number of subprime finance companies that are now being bought by private equity firms. So that's a concern. Chris Steinberg made one point about the percentage of loans in subprime. One thing that he didn't say is that the amount of the subprime the amount of the auto market has grown tremendously. It's now almost a $1 trillion market. In fact, even the New York Fed, in looking at auto loan statistics, said that looking at the percentage of subprime overall is a bit misleading because it doesn't take into account the growth of that whole market. And so even though it may be the percentage may be the same, the number of people are growing. It's not 33% of borrowers, it's 33% of the loans that are out there. But if the lending market is growing, that means there's more borrowers, more loans. And if you have risk in the market, and that's something we're concerned about, and part of the reason you may not see a huge rise yet in delinquencies and defaults is because we're at the beginning stages of it. And one thing I hope we've learned from the crisis is that when we start to see issues related to underwriting, we start to see issues related to what kind of quality are we putting into the market, that's when we should raise the level of concern.
Do I understand correctly that there is now an investigation being coordinated by the Justice Department into this whole subprime auto lending, Chris?
Yes, it's been widely reported that there is an active investigation from the Department of Justice through the U.S. Attorney in the Southern District of New York, who's issued several subpoenas related to the subprime auto market. The Securities and Exchange Commission has issued subpoenas related to this. The New York Department of Financial Services, the New York Department of Consumer Affairs, a number of AGs with the Massachusetts Attorney General's Office has investigations. By my count, there are no less than about a half dozen investigations right now into whether or not there are problems in the subprime market.
What do you make of this, Chris Steinberg?
Well, I don't think I could disagree more in that basically you're saying that there's a race to the bottom like there was in the mortgage market for subprime auto. We're not seeing any indications of any of the statistics of that. We just talked about how the percentage of subprime borrowers is actually decreased. We've talked about the credit quality of the actual credit scoring of the average customer is actually increasing. We're seeing performance of a slight uptick in delinquencies on the 30 and 60-day delinquencies. But the risk managers at these companies are looking at that closely. The investors are very savvy people. They've been dealing in auto for a long time. They know this marketplace. This is not a strange way. We had a lot of international money and other coming into the securitization market. I think it's a very defined market. They understand it. No one has lost money. No investor has lost money in a securitization in the auto market.
But the question is, have those who purchased these used cars with subprime mortgages lost their cars because of failure to be able to pay their loans, Chris?
Well, I think we're seeing an increase, we're seeing increasing pressure on that. And I think there's a couple of other points that are worth making on that. One is that what we've found over the last 10 years or so is that people are now prioritizing their car payment over anything else. And the old adage is you can live in your car, but you can't drive your house to work. So whether or not they default on their car loan may be also masking that they might be defaulting on their other loans. They may not be able to afford to pay the other loans that they have outstanding. So it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on those families. I think so when I talked about the problems with the market and the comparisons to subprime mortgage, that's one of the bets that these lenders are making, is that people will continue to pay on their car loans because cars are vital to most people. It's their only way to get to work. And so they're betting on the fact that these folks are going to continue to prioritize their auto payment. I'm not as concerned about whether investors are losing money or not, and I'm not. I hope that's not the bar to whether or not we look at whether there are problems in the marketplace. And certainly, you know, we've heard that there's no, you know, it's not going to cause a widespread financial panic. I hope that's not the bar for when we look at whether or not there are appropriate practices in place. What I do look at is, are we making loans that have risk built into them that's inappropriate and is causing people to lose their cars? And we're seeing increased evidence of that, both anecdotally and in the data that we're seeing.
Michael, do you want to comment?
Well, I do. I mean, I think Chris Kukla echoes a lot of some of the stories, you know, the hardships that we've reported on that people encounter because of these loans. But I do want to mention that, you know, this growth isn't happening in a vacuum. I mean, and it's not purely driven by the, you know, private equity and investors waking up and wanting to suddenly discovering subprime auto loans. We must remember, like, the Federal Reserve, by keeping and its interest rates so low since the financial crisis, you know, has played a role in driving investors to look for higher yields, and subprime auto loans or subprime auto loan securities are one area and are one type of asset that has a higher yield. So that's what the Fed has sort of wanted to do to get the economy going again, and this is potentially one of the consequences of that. Now, there's an upside to that, which is more autos are being sold, and that's good for the economy, and people are able to get cars and get out to their jobs. But as we're discussing here, there's a lot of downside to that, too.
Michael Corkery of the New York Times, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. I'm going to open the phones now, 800-433-8850. Let's go to Wabash, Indiana. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. I love you.
Thanks.
I wanted to make the point that this really isn't a new situation, and this kind of lending is kind of predatory on people that cannot really afford a car. They need a car, but they can't really afford it. Not only can they not make the payment, but many of these buy-here-pay-here places sell cars that are in such disrepair, all of a sudden the owner is looking at thousands of dollars in repair, and they can't afford that either.
What do you think of that, Chris?
Well, we have three Chris's on the show.
Yeah.
I think Chris is right on a few levels. One, you know, he talks about buy-here-pay-here dealers, which is something that Chris Steinberg and I haven't talked about yet, which is about 10% of the marketplace, which are dealers who are financing the cars themselves. They collect the payments themselves. There are six serious issues in that market. The average repossession rate in that market is around 30%. These are cars that are being bought cheap and then fixed up a little bit, then sold for high prices. They require high down payments, and then they have high interest rates on top of it.
The high maintenance as well.
Sure. These are cars that usually have well over 100,000 miles on the odometer. So they're pretty bad, you know, quality, and there are serious issues in that market. Even in the used car market, though, I think you do see that there are, you know, we're stretching sort of the limits of affordability here. When you see an average loan term of 66 months, what that means is that they have to stretch the loan term out to make the monthly payments, quote unquote, affordable. And that's a real concern to us. We're also seeing things like loan-to-value ratio. So the amount that you borrow compared to the value of the car is now at an average, for subprime borrowers, of 130 to 140%. So these are folks who are already, you know, they're starting out underwater because this is a depreciating asset over time. But then they're borrowing more than the car is worth.
But at the same time, let's face it, it gives that buyer an opportunity to own a car, whereas otherwise he or she might not be able to.
And I think that's, you know, we agree that it's important for people to have access to transportation. We know that the majority of jobs are not available. You can't get to them by public transit. We know that there was a study in Baltimore that showed that 60% of jobs were not accessible by public transit. That's important. That all the more reason we need to have fair, affordable loans in the marketplace. And right now we're seeing a push toward loans that don't meet that standard.
Chris Steinpert, I want to go back to the kinds of investigations that Chris Kukla talked about. What are your thoughts on those?
I think we're obviously cooperating with any requests that came to those subpoenas. I think they were issued months ago. We've heard no response to those. I think they were some in response to the New York Times article that Michael and his colleague wrote. But I think what they're doing is looking into that and finding not their evidence of some of the things that have been claimed. Look at auto just generally. Do you know the average car is now almost 11 years old that's on the road today?
Mine's 12 years old.
Yours is 12 years old. So the average is approaching 11 years. That ownership, most people own a car for 96 months. That's 8 years. That's never happened before. Chris Kukla mentioned that the loan terms are expanding or lengthening a little bit. We've not seen any evidence where those lengthening terms have had a negative impact on payment and keeps that monthly payment affordable.
Chris Steinberg, the American Financial Services Association. Short break here. We'll be right back.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the investment firm of Raymond James, wealth management, banking, and capital markets. Learn more at lifewellplanned.com. From Cigna, a global health service company dedicated to helping people improve their health, well-being, and sense of security at Cigna.com. And from the Cy Sims Foundation, since 1985, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts towards a better life. More information is available at CySimsFoundation.org.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, for this month's Reader's Review, Still Alice by Lisa Genova. It's the story of a Harvard psychology professor as she experiences early onset Alzheimer's disease. A discussion of the bestseller that's now also a major motion picture. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. We're talking about subprime loans in the used car industry. Here are two contrasting emails. The first from Bridget in Oregon, who says, I received a high interest rate, 20%, 5-year auto loan in the mid-90s. I was a single mom with questionable credit. I have to say I was very grateful. I had to get to work. I was desperate. I paid off the loan, increased my credit score, and got back on my feet again. I don't know what I would have done without that loan. Here's a posting on Facebook from Stephen. He says, is it not unethical for the auto companies to give loans to buy their own autos? They have no incentive to make sure people can afford to repay the debt, the auto manufacturers are just creating another problem. Chris Kukla.
Well, and you know, certainly there are definitely success stories in auto lending. Clearly, there are people who get the loan, they pay them off, it works well. That's great. And in that situation, she said she was grateful that somebody was willing to give her a loan, and that's great too. I think our concern is that there are increasing numbers of loans, however, that are being made that are putting people in jeopardy of losing that car, unnecessarily so. When you layer that risk on top of risk, like we were talking about earlier, that's not a good situation.
Chris Steinberg, you look uncomfortable.
Well, I think Chris states that are anecdotally, I mean, the facts just don't bear out what he's saying.
But aren't the anecdotes what ultimately make up the story?
I know that Diane, you're absolutely right about that. And we all have personal stories about friends and other people that we know that have gone through a difficult time and had trouble making their auto payment and might even have a repossession in their history. Lenders truly want to work with those individuals as much as they possibly can. And even today, the analytics have gotten so good that people that had repossessions just a few years ago are able to get financing again for another car. Now, Chris could contend that it's not a good thing that they get financing. And I think it enables so many people to get back into the workforce. It's car ownership is essential for most people in most areas of the country. We have an urbanization and good public transportation, not as much of a need. Millennials, in many ways, younger people don't see the need for an automobile. But most people, it is an essential part of what they do and an essential part of their life. And I just cannot emphasize enough that these loans that are being made today are not riskier. The average monthly payment, which is truly the affordability index about whether you can afford it today or yesterday, has only gone up slightly. So the average monthly payment, now Chris warns about, yes, the monthly payment has stayed about the same, and they've achieved this by lengthening the terms of the loan. And some of that might be true, but that monthly payment is affordable, and the people are trading in those cars, getting other new cars or different cars, and the reliability, the people are driving them longer. Should we pay attention to what's going on? Should we look at every indicator? Should we take any warning signs that we see out there seriously? Absolutely.
Chris Kukla.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, is that I think what we're saying is that we're seeing evidence in the market right now that there are issues in place, and we should be taking a look at them. And we welcome the fact that there are regulators who are now taking a deep look at that and just trying to figure out whether there are issues within the marketplace. Certainly, we would say that getting access to credit is important. Access to credit is vital. It's the way that we're able to build wealth in communities by letting people buy houses and buy cars. Our concern has always been, is there fairness within the system?
Michael, let me ask you, what about the ratings agencies? How are they assessing the securitized auto loans?
Well, I think there's a range of approaches that the rating agencies have taken. It goes from, some firms have said these are, quite safe and going to give many of them our highest rating, a AAA, largely because many of the bonds, have a provision in there where the lender will take the first loss so that the investors, it takes a while for if there are any losses, for those to get the investors. But there's one particular rating agency that, Fitch Ratings, that has come out and said that they will only give AAA to a handful of lenders or lender bonds made by certain lenders that have long track records, and they will not give that high rating to any of the tranches of these bonds to other lenders, which is a departure from say some of the what many critics have said was sort of the rubber stamping of the mortgage securities, where they would give everything a AAA. So they are starting to raise, even those that are giving the AAA, some of the rating agencies are starting to say some of the credit quality of these bonds are declining. They have noted just what Chris Kukla has noted, some of the lengthening of terms of the loans, some of the higher loan to value they've said have creeped up, and some of their loss estimates have also started to increase.
All right. And what are the companies that are under investigation, Chris Kukla?
Well, we only know from the ones that are publicly traded who have disclosed that in their SEC filings. So we don't know the whole totality of who's under investigation. And that's something that the folks keep secret. We know that, for instance, Honda Finance and Toyota Finance have said that they have some investigations ongoing. Santander USA has said that they have some open investigations. There are a few others that have been bandied about in the trade press about whether they are or they aren't. And that's out there. A couple of points I do want to make on some questions that have been out there before. One is on the ratings agencies, and you know, you'll recall that in the subprime mortgage market, even the worst of the subprime mortgage bonds were getting AAA ratings. The ratings agencies are being paid to give those ratings, and to get more business, they have to continue to give decent ratings. So I don't always take great stock in whether or not they're actually looking out for risk. The securitization model is also meant to diffuse risk. It's meant to spread it out over multiple investors so that there's not too much risk borne on one person, and it allows credit to be continued. That's great if it works, but it also creates a situation where you can take excessive risk. And then finally, one thing that I'll say is that we're seeing issues within this marketplace that look a lot like the mortgage market. We haven't even touched on the fact yet that, for instance, car dealers have the ability to manipulate the interest rate for compensation, which is something that happened in the mortgage market and that the Dodd-Frank Act actually prohibited in the mortgage market.
Say more about that. What do you mean?
Sure. So in the way that the loan's constructed in auto finance is that the dealer is the initial creditor, and then the dealer is going to sell that loan to a third party. It's a bank or credit union or finance company, whatever. So when they have the negotiations with the finance company, the bank or credit union or whoever's going to buy that loan, the negotiation, the lender is basically bidding on that contract. So they will set a minimum interest rate that they have to get in order to compensate for the risk that's involved, and that's great. But then they give the dealer the ability to add to that interest rate and keep some or all of that difference as compensation. We estimate that for people who bought cars in 2009, will pay $25.8 billion of interest over the life of their loan. That's attributable to this increase. Now, I want to be fair and say nobody is saying that dealers shouldn't get compensated for the work that they do. And I think that we would agree that if a dealer's doing work to get that loan through, that's fine. But this is a hidden incentive. It's not disclosed. The vast majority of people have no idea it happens. It's resulted in discriminatory impact going back 20 years, and it's a real concern.
All right. Hey, let's go to Bob in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to what is the leverage rate of these financial institutions? Because that's what that's why a lot of these big companies, big banks went under, because they were leveraging the loans at 30 to 1. They didn't have the collateral to back up if a loan went bad. And as far as regulations go, the financial industry donates a lot of money to the politicians in Washington to change these regulations, to their favor. And another thing is the financial industry ran the economy into the ground during wartime. So what kind of, the integrity of the people working in this field must be very, very low.
All right. Let's not necessarily talk about the integrity of the people involved in the industry. But, Michael Corkery, what about the leveraging of these loans?
Sure. I mean, that's one of the things about securitization is so attractive to some of these lenders and these finance companies is that they're able to, get financing quite inexpensively and can get quite a bit of leverage to make more and more of these loans, without having to sort of grow their balance sheets the way a traditional bank was would. So again, you know, it's a bit of a chicken and egg. There's lots of demand for these loans, which means they'll need to make more loans, and then you've got the whole machine churning. These are not systemic institutions that are primarily subprime lenders in the way that so many of the Wall Street firms, the Lehman Brothers, were so heavily into mortgages. There's not a question that these one firm, if it should run into trouble, one subprime auto firm would bring down the financial system.
Right. Right.
But nonetheless, it's similar practices of financing.
Let's go to Bristol, Indiana. Hi there, Mary. You're on the air.
Yes, I've been listening to the conversation here, and I'm concerned because I know of an individual who works full time here in this area, Elkhart, Indiana, where the interest rates are dreadfully high, and her full time job is to do the processing of repossessions. And I think we stick our heads in the sand if we say everything's peachy dandy, because it's not. People who cannot afford a regular loan are being taken advantage of right and left.
That's in your view, clearly. And certainly not in your view, Chris Steinberg.
No, as we talked about before, auto lending is today very similar to what it was 10 years ago, very similar to what it was 20 years ago. We do not see any indication that there's been a dive down into the subprime market deeper than it ever has before. Actually, the numbers bear out that it's fairly similar. These securitizations that are being done today, even though there is high demand for securitization, why? Because the performance of the securitizations has been so good. And auto has been. You talked about the engine of the economy and how successful that has been. So I just don't see where there's this flash of a three or a four alarm fire out there that we have to run and put out.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Here's an email from Donna, who says, my 40-year-old daughter came home from a treatment program for alcoholism last spring. She had a huge amount of debt, no job, a prior history of only working for a few months, then getting fired. In spite of that, after 1 week in a sober house, she went to a car dealership. They sold her a used car. She left the state in the car a few days later, has not worked since. There is no way she made any payments on that loan. Clearly, we cannot know the full extent of that story. But Chris Kukla, what are your recommendations to people going out there looking for a used car who may be credit risky? What do you say to them?
I say be careful. And certainly, you know, when we talk about the subprime market, one thing that we haven't talked about is we assume that everyone who's in the subprime market has had problems with credit, and that's true for a number of them. It's also the marketplace where people are when they don't have a credit history at all. So they may not be a bad credit risk. It's just that there's not a lot in the book to tell you what their credit history might be. And so they start out in that space as well. What we've said is there are a lot of different competing demand. There are a lot of competing incentives within the auto dealership that you need to be aware of. I think most people spend most of their time looking at the car price. And that's the easiest one because it's an easy one to measure. And there's a lot of information about it. But anyone can know what the price is. Chris Steinberg and I can walk into the same dealership, know what the sticker price is. It's the same for both of us. It doesn't take a lot of investment of our time. What most people don't know is that for the average dealership, the finance and insurance office, the one that sells you the financing and all of the add-on products, is about 50% of the dealer's profit. So they're going to make most of their money when you get done negotiating with the car on the car. You have to have as much information as you can, but the only way to get that is to go and get lots of credit offers. Now, that sounds great, right? And if you've got lots of credit offers available to you, that works well. There are not a lot of subprime lenders out there, storefront lenders who are out there competing for your business. They're doing it mostly through the dealership. And so for a lot of people, the dealership is really the only place that they can go where there's an actual person. They don't have to go on the internet or make a phone call. They can actually talk to somebody about their options. The concern we have is that for most people to go to the dealership, get through that process, you have to negotiate the car, you have to negotiate your trade-in, then you have to give up your personal information, and then you get a loan offer. And we're asking people, go to multiple dealerships, and that's the only way to protect yourself. That's why we think there's some reasonable consumer protections that could be put in place that would make this market safer and fairer for everybody.
Such as?
Well, one is the practice that we talked about with dealer interest rate markups. It's a practice that's no longer allowed in the mortgage market. We think it's one that's well past its time. The mortgage market right now has a general ability to repay standard on it, that basically you have to make sure that loans that people can make can actually make the payment. That's something we should be taking a look at. Chris talked about how there isn't the no doc loans in the auto space. Actually, this is one lending space where that's actually prevalent.
All right, Chris Steinberg, what would you say to potential buyers?
Well, I think Chris and I can agree on this. The more homework that any customer, whether it be subprime or super prime, does before going into the dealership, the better. You know, it's surprising to learn that today, because of the internet, actually you used to visit four dealerships. Now people usually only go to one, possibly two, because they've already done a lot of research. But please negotiate and shop around for that loan, too.
Good advice. Chris Steinberg, Chris Kukla, and Michael Corkery, thank you all so much. And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkert, Denise Couture, Susan Casey, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Danielle Knight, Allison Brody, and Alexandra Boti. The engineer is Timothy Olmsted. Natalie Urblifker answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington, D.C.